good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I am here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and our two guests are Wendy Ring and Leo Cusimano, and we're going to be talking today about the HRC Human Rights Campaign Family Project Picnic specifically, which is coming up, but the HRC Family Project and HRC Families, because Leo has an HRC family. Don't you, Leo?
Yes, I do.
I was just at the HRC building, what, a week and a half ago. Got invited up to a meeting at the White House with some progressives.
And so we jotted
up the street.
Michelle, did you say hi to Michelle for me?
We waved.
Oh,
we
okay.
Waved. But we walked up the street and caught them right at the end of the day. But, of course, it was great to see the building again. And,
absolutely.
It's
the gay embassy.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it's like right that. There sort of on Embassy Row.
Absolutely.
What was the meeting that you went to, though? What were you talking about?
I went with a group of Wellstone Action folks, and we were able to spend the whole day there at the White House with staff. We got briefings on lots of topics. We got tours. So it was a great day. So well worth it.
HRC Family Project. HRC, just for anybody who doesn't know, is the Human Rights Campaign. It's the largest advocacy group in the country for the LGBT community. Wendy, tell us a little bit about what the HRC Family Project is.
Well, the HRC Family Project is a component of HRC's work to promote our equality. And the idea of the Family Project is to really focus on public education, advocacy, and programs. And the idea is to educate and empower people of our community to take action, to understand that they're not alone, to work on making our families more visible and building support for our families, as well as to actually improve the policies and practices and work on legislation that's important to our families. So there's a number of different programs and projects and different things going on, but that's sort of a general overview of what the Family Project does.
What is it about our families that is different, that we need advocacy for? I mean, we just have families. I mean, Leo has two kids. It's just a family.
And I think that's the very point that we need to make to people and that we need to understand. And certainly, there are thousands of ways to create families and there are thousands of different ways to define families. And so we need to be able to provide a voice and resources for all kinds of families and to really welcome and embrace family diversity, to work on gender stereotyping, to work on anti-bullying, but also to recognize some of the other things. You know, we focus a lot on children when we talk about families, but there's, you know, elderly and aging issues. There's a lot of gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgender families that are caring for their elderly parents, just like anyone else. And so I think it's really understanding the full range of our families and promoting and working to support those families.
And clearly, you know, Texas was one of the first states, I think the first state to have the Texas Family Law Code, thanks to Louise Raggio, years ago. But it's such a patchwork across the country. Do you focus on educating people on what the laws are in their states? Because it's such a mess. I mean, you cross the border north into Oklahoma, and it's a completely different ballgame for gay couples and children.
Absolutely. And if you go to the HRC website, you can find a place where you can click on a map, and it will really list out all the laws pertinent to your state. And so I think that's very, very important. One of the reasons, actually, that I got involved with HRC years ago was because of that website and just all the information and resources available on the website to really help us to understand what we're fighting against and how to get around it.
Now, I want to talk about Leo's family a little bit, but before we do, how hard is it compared to other states for a gay couple or a gay single to form a family here in Texas?
You know, I think maybe Leo would be better equipped to answer that question from a local perspective based upon his experience.
Okay, Leo, first of all, how did you form your family?
Well, for Tony and I, it was a process of getting a dual license. We looked at international adoption and the various ways that you can adopt kids, from locally, domestically adoption to international. And we chose to do the foster to adopt process, which is getting a license to do foster care and adoption. And through that process, you have to go through training, and they teach you the different things that you'll see in adopting kids that have been through foster care. And it's a really extensive program, and it was pretty quick for us, actually. We got our license in May, and in July they matched us up with a child, and by the end of the year we met the children and was able to get them full time in March. So the process for us was actually pretty quick. It's not always quick for that adoption process. It really depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for a blonde-haired, blue-eyed little girl, you may be waiting a long time. So the more open you are to taking, any child that needs a home, the easier it would be.
Well, I think it's so interesting that you said, you started off with, we got a dual license. Because wouldn't that be something to have a license before you could have kids? I know what an effort that went through, and you went through a lot of education, but that's one of the things that I think our country could really benefit from, some parental education before having kids, which we, woefully do not have.
Right. So isn't that interesting that they criticize, and when I say they, the right wing likes to criticize gay couples adopting children or having children, and yet gay couples usually, the one way that they usually don't become families is by getting knocked up at the age of 16 and then getting married and divorced 6 months later. They don't become families by accident. And yet young kids who become parents, one thing that our high schools don't provide usually are parenting classes for them. And Leo, who adopted at a very late age. No, you were in your 40s when you adopted.
I was, 45. Right?
He had to go through classes and yet had more experience than somebody half his age who didn't have to go through that. So I just find that fascinating. But part of the thing with your adoption was you adopted special needs children.
That's correct.
Did that make it easier to adopt, or... was there more scrutiny of your home to make sure that you were prepared to care for a special needs child?
Well, CPS, the type of adoption we did was through CPS, Child Protective Services, and they like working with LGBT couples in the adoption process because we're more open to taking kids with special needs. I think it's because of the background in our community and the stigma of raising kids that we're the knowledge that we can do it is now there, and so we're like, yeah, this is great. But no, there's not any you have to do a home study whenever you do an adoption process, and there's not any difference in a home study because you're taking a special needs child. I think the classes teach you about kids that have been abused and that kind of stuff in the licensing process, but for the most part, it's more of a preparation that you need to do yourselves and your willingness to take a child with special needs.
Now, once you found out that you were going to get a special needs child, you found out he had a brother.
Well, actually, it was the opposite. We were looking for a child, a toddler, and they matched us up with JJ. Pretty quickly, and they said, "Oh, this is a perfect match. Even looks like you guys, And it was funny, and they said, "But he has a sibling," and we had checked that we were open to sibling adoption, that he had a brother. They said, "Well, how old of a child would you take?" I'm like, "Oh, 7." And they said, "How about 8?" I'm like, "Okay, 8," kind of thing, So that's it. Was actually the opposite. We actually got aligned with JJ first, and then Elijah.
And Elijah is your special needs child.
Yes.
So originally, you were just going to have a normal adoption, healthy, happy kid, and then all of a sudden, you found out you were going to get a special needs kid too. what kind of discussion did the two of you have? Because, again, with somebody who it becomes a parent naturally, you don't have the luxury of discussing it first.
And sure you do. I mean, lots of people who have it accidentally, or maybe you're unprepared for it, but I think lots of people do plan. I do think that gay couples in particular spend a lot more time because it is such a planned mm-hmm. process that they're more prepared.
But what I mean is you might have had given birth to a child, and as the child's developing, you find out that there are problems. But here you're being told ahead of time. And you're right, prenatally you can tell that there are going to be some problems with children, certain things. But this was a case where you're being told that you're going to have a special needs child in the house. What kind of conversation did the two of you have about it?
Well, I think first you need to understand that whenever you adopt siblings, that's considered a special needs adoption. And then, you receive a book, a notebook full of information that you need to comb through and kind of, and there's different ranges of special needs, from... someone that just needs special ed to someone that's
physically handicapped,
right? Physically handicapped and so forth. So yeah, and for us, we have had family members that were special needs, and we had a support system set up as well. So and that's kind of why we wanted to walk down that road of getting kids. It's because we were. Getting older, and we felt like we traveled a lot, and we have a stable environment, a nice home and a nice job, or a stable home, stable job, and it was just for us, it was time to take that step, and I have family that live close, and so it was a good support system. And for me personally, my parents are gone, my brother is gone, so it's just my sister and I. So we wanted to expand our family. My sister adopted a little girl from China. And then so, Tony and I adopted the two boys.
Okay. And this comes back to Wendy when I was asking, how is Texas? One of the things Leo said was that CPS, Child Protective Services, here likes working with gay and lesbian families, which I think alone is a statement that would surprise most people, because we don't think of Texas as being progressive when it comes to issues like that, but Child Protective Services in Texas actually is.
It is, absolutely.
Do you know how that compares to some of the surrounding states? And she's shaking her head.
I don't. I think, as Patty mentioned earlier, I mean, it's so difficult to keep track, to certainly, if you want to know how do we compare to Alabama, or how do we compare to Oklahoma, or how do we compare to California, we would really have to then sit down with the HRC website and look at it, mm-hmm. every aspect of all the different things the idea of second parent adoptions, the idea of, is there something actually in the state constitutions or in the state law that says, it's acceptable or it's unacceptable to adopt, for gay people to adopt. So it's really... It's so individual that it's difficult to keep mm-hmm. up with on a state-by-state basis. Certainly.
But when we have legislative sessions, as we do in Texas every other year, for many, many years now, we've had to fight off bad legislation that people introduce in the House and in the Senate and work through that and lobby and such. And one mm-hmm. of those that we had a big fight, in recent years has been about adoption in Texas. And there was a big push and bills introduced to limit adoption in Texas to heterosexual people, and that it just blows my mind that there's a mentality, particularly in the governing body of the state of Texas, that if you're straight, you're somehow automatically qualified to parent, and if you're gay, you're automatically mm-hmm. by inherently in that attribute mm-hmm. unqualified to parent,
and further that you would be damaging in some way. And there was, sort of a famous quote by one of these state legislators that was trying to sort of get this law that says that gay people can't adopt. And he said, I think it would be better for all the children to be raised in orphanages rather than go to a gay family. And there aren't orphanages.
Right. That's so insane. There's so much wrong with that.
Yeah. You can't even begin. Every word in that sentence is wrong. Mm-hmm. But it really shows the attitudes that sometimes we're fighting against. And goes back to your question initially about, you know, why do we need to do this work? And a lot of it comes down to really educating and dispelling myths and highlighting families like Leo's that just say, you know, we're just people, and we just want to share our love with our families.
Mm-hmm. And what's so interesting to me is that, you know, when we're talking about how do families form, sometimes they're just there. And people come into your families. I mean, when you're born, you don't get to choose who your family is, you know, and who's involved and who you're going to meet in life. But like Leo, you adopted, you know, later in life. And Laurent, our co-host, who's not on this week, he and his partner, you know, had a surrogate, and she was theirs from the get-go. And then others, you know, or maybe leave a heterosexual relationship when they come out, and they already have kids. And so they bring kids into the relationship. So there's a huge patchwork of families, mm-hmm. matching up with a patchwork of state laws across the country. It's a difficult thing to navigate.
That's very true. And I think for the Family Project here locally, what we aim to do is be a comprehensive resource for those couples. You know, providing guidance and support. And you know, what we want to do is reach out and engage with that community and build activities and around to help that community. And that's one of the things that we're doing. That's one of the reasons why we're doing this picnic. We do, here locally with the HSC Family Project, we do workshops and social events, and this picnic is one of them. We have a picnic scheduled for November 6th at the Arboretum, and it's kind of a fun kind of a way for gay and lesbian parents with kids that to get together and socialize and network, and that's a good resource for people to engage with each other and find out, yeah, that is a good school, and oh yeah, that is a good summer camp to send my kids to. It's a great opportunity for us.
It's also a good way, I would think, that even though your kids shouldn't feel like, well, my family really is different, they will see, depending upon what school they're in, that, you know, all of my friends either have one mother or one father or a mother and a father, but we're the only family that has two dads, and this is a way for them to see there are other families that look like theirs.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a good part of it, you know, to see that diversity. And that's part of what we do on the Family Project as well. We speak at schools. I spoke recently to some DISD future administrators and about diversity that they'll find when they enter the school system. And it is true. I mean, when these teachers go into school today, they will find a very diverse environment with grandparents raising kids and two moms, two dads, or a single gay guy, you know, or, you know, it's a variety of things that they'll find, and that's one of the things that we do.
We need to take a break before we go, and we'll be right back with more with Leo Cusimano and Wendy Ring from the HRC Family Project. I was interviewing somebody recently, and I asked him if in his school he was the only one with a family that looked like his. And he said, yeah, everybody else only had one parent. So, we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
KNON 89.3 FM is broadcasting Democracy Now!, a national daily radio news program covering today's news and issues. Democracy Now! Is hosted by Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez, broadcast worldwide on over 900 stations, pioneering the largest community media collaboration in the country. Democracy Now! Can be heard on KNON Mondays through Thursdays from 8 to 9 a.m. Not the same old news heard everywhere else. It's news of the people for the people. Democracy Now!, Monday through Thursday mornings at 8 a.m. on KNON 89.3 FM.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. And our guests today are from the HRC Family Project. Wendy Ring is actually on the HRC Board of Governors. And Leo Cusimano, she just dragged in off the street because he happens to have a family.
There aren't very many people up at 7 a.m. So he was.
He just happened
Leo's
to be
yeah.
out on Maple Avenue, and we dragged him in and said, oh, yeah, you have some kids. We're talking about Leo's family in particular, but gay and lesbian families, or just as we like to call them, families. And you know, how families form and how, when you're not having a family in the usual way, and by the usual way, I mean that old-fashioned way where people...
The Dr. and Mrs. Alex Stone
right,
way.
Right, like our theme song.
Right.
Right. Yeah. when you're having, when you're forming your family in other alternative ways. Leo, LaRon, when he talks about his family, he says that even though they did not have Gabrielle until they were together for 10 years, they talked about having kids on their first date.
Oh, my gosh. I could think of other things on my first date to talk about than kids, but
well, that's part
that's
of what
for a different show.
That's part of what attracted Wendy. Them to each other when they started talking. They both had this desire to one day have kids. You and Tony, I'm assuming, did not talk about kids on your first date, and you were together more than 20 years before you adopted.
That's true.
So you had a good, stable home. You were together longer than most heterosexual couples are for their entire lives, but you were together more than 20 years when you actually adopted. When did you first start talking about it, and how did you start talking about the idea of having kids?
Well, for us, I think it was early on when we got together. We were both in college. I was 18. Tony was 20. And Tony's from a big family, so we actually had a lot of interaction with kids, and early on I learned that how much Tony loved kids and how good he was with them. And so I always known that Tony wanted kids, and I wanted kids as well. But I think for Tony, if you asked him, he would say, you know, the reason why we waited so long is because he had to wait for his husband to grow up. And so I think I've done that, and especially with my family and needing to expand my family, you know. But it was pretty early on. It wasn't our first date, but it was, you know, in the first year or so, it was pretty evident that that was the path that we would go down. But, you know, we were young, and we had a lot of stuff to do with our lives, and you know, so it took that kind of...
And then you must have suddenly or gradually decided, had the talk, and said, you know what, time to take the next step. How do you jump to that next step, and what is that next step?
Well, for us, it was helping raise one or two of his nieces or nephews when we were in Louisiana, where we're from, and getting an insight of, oh, this is kind of what raising kids is all about. So for us, it was like, okay, great. Yeah, this is something that we want to do. And for us, we had to look at where we're at emotionally and educational wise. Tony wanted to get his PhD, and so we wanted to wait till that happened. And so our careers were in a good place, and it was ready to take that step. But it was something that we also had friends that had adopted through the CPS system. So we wanted to take that step. We did look internationally, and I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to give $30,000 or $40,000 to a country and lie to them and potentially lose that and lose the adoption process. And so locally, we did look at California, which you can adopt. And do one single adoption and have both parents on the birth certificate. Here in Texas, you have to do a second parent adoption, and in many states, you do have to do a second parent adoption. So that's kind of what we decided that, hey, this is the path that we want to take.
You know, and when we talk about marriage equality, one of the things that even in New York gay families got were, if you are married now, when you're adopting, you're adopting as a married couple.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so fascinating about the patchwork is that, you know, our efforts in Texas, when we deal with legislative issues and lobbying in our own state to change state law, we're doing it on a very different level and very different topics than someplace like New York
Massachusetts,
where marriage is in place.
New York did not have those good laws. I mean, they were harder to adopt than Texas was. And I know that from some friends of mine up there who went through a whole lot more to try to adopt. One straight couple took them, I think, their kid was 6 years old. They had him from birth, and he was 6 years old before the adoption was final. I mean, New York had horrible adoption laws. And they've fixed that now, to some extent, for married couples.
Well, I mean, that's true. And Texas is not the easiest state either. I mean, even for a second parent adoption, we actually had to do that in San Antonio. Here in Dallas County, you don't get to pick your judge. And so it's possible that you would get, the clerk does that. So it's possible that you would get in front of a judge and they would deny it. Mm-hmm. So in San Antonio, you're able to actually choose the court that you're going to go into, and with some experienced attorneys, they bring you to the right judge, and it's great, and it's an amazing process. You know, we had to do two adoptions. You know, the first adoption and the second parent adoption, and both of them were in front of judges that really love to see this. You know, they look at criminals and all kind of negative stuff, and when they do family court like this, it's a very positive thing. And we was able to get behind the counter with the judge and take pictures and all that kind of fun stuff. But yeah, it's not always an easy process. Today, you can do a second parent adoption in Dallas County.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the home study, because I think that's probably one of the most frightening parts of adopting, that somebody is coming into your house and looking at how you live and judging you. Straight people, when they have a kid, nobody comes into their house and says, "Oh my God." Now, they might if they're reported.
Like, where's that fire extinguisher?
But things like that you had to think about. What was the home study like?
I mean, it wasn't too bad. You know, you think, oh, they're going to go through my cabinets. It's going to be, you know, they're going to do it. It's an inspection of my home kind of thing. And it wasn't too bad. You know, there's some guidelines that you make sure all the electrical outlets have plugs in it, and you need, you know, a couple of fire extinguishers. And for us, we actually had to set up a different bedroom for JJ. And so the worst thing for me was the medicine cabinet. They want all the medications in the house under lock and key. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, medicine cabinets don't have locks. So you have to take all your stuff out, and I had to find a toolbox that I found to put all the medicine in. It was like, it's not a good thing to do. I mean, you know, but the process was pretty simple. She walked through the house, and it was no problem. Now, when you do the second parent adoption, you have to update that home study as well. So yeah, it takes another 6 months. Once you do the first adoption, it takes another 6 months to do the second parent adoption, and in that time frame, they update that home study. So they come back to the house and do an update.
How long was the person doing the home study? How long was that person actually in your house?
Maybe 30 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, they don't really go through every room. They just look around and make sure you have a fire extinguisher and make sure you have a smoke detector and that kind of stuff. But it's not too bad.
Because on Brothers and Sisters last season, when they adopted, there's this whole big scene about the home study, and they invited the person to dinner, and the dinner's a disaster, and she's talking to the entire family. It was like a 30-minute thing that you went through.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, you can choose who does your home study.
Actually, there are a couple of gay and lesbian companies that do home studies. Mm-hmm. And here in Dallas.
You know, in last week's Modern Family, they misplaced the date and time that they're going to get their home study for the second, and they're going to adopt a second kid, and they have sort of a food fight, and it's just a horrible mess when they show up. So one of those funny moments in TV.
So once your home study is done, you can even find somebody who you know or who's been recommended to do the home study. If not, does CPS just assign somebody?
You know, you want to have your home study because it's more than just coming to your home. A home study is kind of a report on your family, and so the home study mostly is asking the couple questions and doing interviews,
like
and
what?
In writing, you know, kind of a report. Yes, this is what you know.
Asking you what? What did they want to know?
What kind of support do you have? In terms of what kind of experience do you have with kids? Do you have a supportive structure? Questions like that kind of help identify whether or not you would make a good parent. You know, what kind of experience you have with kids? It's that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was the medicines.
Mm-hmm.
Any other types of things that they suggested that you do before a child comes into the house? Not negative, but you know, here are a couple of suggestions.
Well, for us specifically, it was with the brothers. They wanted them in separate rooms.
Mm-hmm.
With Elijah's special needs, they wanted to have that taken care of. So we actually had to create a separate room for JJ.
Not a problem. That
no.
was a reasonable suggestion,
yeah.
Then. And you're glad that they suggested it rather than
Absolutely.
Putting them in the same room and then having to separate them. and in a way, then, it was actually helpful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, they had some good suggestions. I mean, it's not, you know, a home study is not as frightening as it sounds, you know.
We got the picnic coming up.
We do. I'm so excited.
Is this
about
the
it.
First one for Dallas? Have you done this before?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's, you know, that's one of the things with the HRC Family Project that we're wanting to do locally is to look at creating a more comprehensive or cohesive community. You know, Dallas is really known, the gay and lesbian community here in Dallas is really known for having a very cohesive community. It's not so cohesive in the family area. There's several different organizations out there that do the same thing. Nationally, we have the HRC Family Project and HRC. We also have
Family Equality Council.
Equality Family Council as well. And they have a local affiliate that does social events as well. Resource Center does social events for gay and lesbian couples. There's churches. There's lots of different things. There's a Yahoo group out there for gay and lesbian couples with kids. There's websites. So what we want to do is really have a round table in the spring and get all these folks together and create a more cohesive, create some synergy around that and a more cohesive community.
This is actually our second social event of the year. The first was a trip to the zoo.
That was
so awesome.
And this is at the Arboretum. And it's really an opportunity for parents just to come with their children. And you don't have to be a parent. You know, bring your nephew or niece or bring whoever is important to you and come. And I think sometimes we also, you know, we talk a lot about lesbian, gay, but we also want to mention transgender as well, that there are a lot of challenges dealing with those kinds of issues and with gender identity issues. And so we're open to all. We're excited about the opportunity to meet more people and to begin networking. And we actually have a family-friendly function image that we have on all of our
logo, right?
Mm-hmm. HRC events that are branded as being specifically welcoming to families. And so people can go on the website, our local HRC website, whenever they see that big F, that means it's family friendly.
And I want to make something clear. When you're mm-hmm. saying family friendly, and we're talking about specifically Leo and a gay family, we're talking about all families.
Absolutely.
Straight families, gay families, transgender people, all families.
I mean,
that's
what HRC is all about, is equality across the board. Yeah. I mean, you know, so yeah, we're talking about straight families
and
as well.
And you'd love to see some straight
Absolutely.
Families there, too, just because these are people who are also embracing and are there for their
Absolutely.
Own reasons. Yeah.
We're interested in embracing family diversity in all of its splendor.
Mm-hmm. I can remember 10, 12 years ago, you get a call from media saying, can you hook us up with a gay couple who has kids? And it was like, two couples. And everybody had their phone numbers, and when something came up, because they were willing to go on television or whatever with their kids.
Well, and Roger and Steve.
Roger and Steve.
There were
two couples. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they were, you know, like the spokespeople, the poster families for issues here. And now when those calls come, it's like, you know, which of dozens and dozens and dozens, who's available at 4 o'clock today, you know.
It's a growing community.
It is.
Well, and people are able to be more and more open and more, to come out more as we continue to improve the awareness, continue to improve education, continue to make it safe for families, and that's what we're all about.
Now, is this also an avenue for families to get involved and sort through areas of discrimination they're encountering locally or statewide or whatever? Do you field a lot of complaints, like, you know, bullying or unfair treatment to parents at schools, or I mean, are you prepared to do that, or is that something that you work with?
Absolutely. We'd love to hear from people in our community who are having these kinds of challenges. We'd love to try to connect them with the kind of resources to help them and to really, as Leo said, to reach out across organizations and just do the best that we can do to help. HRC certainly has a lot of programs and information and outreach, and we've got a lot of resources at our disposal, and we certainly like to be able to connect people to those resources.
I know we're going to take a break in a moment, but the Arboretum, if for no other reason, if you've never been to the Dallas Arboretum, what a great venue. What a spectacular,
absolutely, it's
wonderful
going to be
thing.
So much fun. In fact, they have fairy tale castles up right now. And so our kids will love that. And it's at 11 a.m. on Sunday, November 6th. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We're meeting at the house there in the front lawn. There's a old house there that we're going to meet on the front lawn. Now, everyone, you know, you bring your own picnic lunch, and you know, you're responsible for getting in yourself. But we're going to meet, and it's kind of a easy kind of flow kind of thing that we're going to do.
And the Dallas Arboretum is on the east side of White Rock Lake, sort of in East Dallas.
Yeah. On Garland Road.
On Garland Road. Mm-hmm. Pretty easy to find. I'm sure if you Google just Dallas Arboretum, it'll come up. Mm-hmm. But what a great place. And so you bring your own lunch, and I assume enough for your family.
Yes.
You know, and
unless you want to starve your kids.
No, I'm just thinking maybe you want to share.
that's so you and Aaron. The two of us, we'd be such terrible parents.
We would. You and I, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly you. Anyway, back to the Dallas Arboretum. So you're going to meet there, and so just come as you are.
Mm-hmm.
Bring your basket or your containers of food.
Mm-hmm. And bring your kids.
And bring your kids.
Or your elderly parents. That would be you.
Well, yeah, it is. It's going to be a fun kind of, and we set it up to where it's nice and easy. There's not really going to be like a speaker. You know, we may stand up and say a few words, but you know, it's more for everyone to interact and to gauge and to network with each other and for the kids to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably have some lunch there, and then we'll probably start walking the grounds and seeing what's all that's out there.
And if it's November 6th, it should be down to about 85 then.
Bring a jacket.
Yeah. Be.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We're talking to Leo Cusimano and Wendy Ring. They are with the HRC Family Project. And we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Did you know that Texans now have a free and easy way to recycle their used personal computers? Thanks to a state law, computer manufacturers must offer recycling programs. Recycling is free and convenient and conserves natural resources by recovering valuable materials that can be reused to make new products. For more information about computer recycling, www.takecareoftexas.org. Sponsored by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality and aired in cooperation with the Texas Association of Broadcasters and this station.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink and Leo Cusimano and Wendy Ring from the HRC Family Project. You're here. Wendy, just during the break, you were just talking about an incident which shows the need for projects like this and for HRC's involvement in a school in New Jersey.
There's a high school special education teacher in New Jersey who posted on her private Facebook all kinds of just horrific language about gay people specifically, and a lot of it was sort of air quotes faith-based, and invoking, you know, gay people, comparing gay people to cancer and sinners and all these kinds of things. And it was really provoked by a poster that was up at her school in recognition of National Coming Out Day and LGBT equality and those kinds of things. It was just a simple poster in the high school. And, you know, I think people may say, well, you know, she has a right to private expression of her opinion, and that's true. But when you think about teachers with this sort of vitriolic language and this lack of sort of control in terms of being able to express their opinions, it really makes you concerned. You know, New Jersey just passed one of the most comprehensive anti-bullying laws in the country, and you wonder about someone like this being able to really enforce that if they feel so strongly and feel so strongly about expressing expressing their views in sort of a private slash public way. And so, you know, HRC certainly responded to that immediately, sent out online action alerts, and I believe HRC was present at the school board meeting yesterday when this was discussed. So I think this just really shows that, you know, even if you live in a state where there are where there is a comprehensive anti-bullying law and where you think that things are okay, that we really need to continue to direct these resources to watch what's going on and to really educate and provide support. And you feel for the kids at that school who she put down.
Laws are only as good as the people enforcing them.
Absolutely.
And on the reverse, we don't have the laws protecting, but your experience and every experience I've heard of from Child Protective Services in Texas is that we're looking for the best families. We take the home studies very seriously, and that doesn't mean that every straight family will make good parents, and that every gay family will make bad parents, or the opposite. You know, there are lots of gay people who apply and probably should not be parents. I'd be a perfect example of that.
I'd be curious to know how many kids currently, you know, under the custody of CPS, whether through abandonment or, you know, whatever, are from gay couples versus straight couples.
Oh.
And the indignation of hearing that, you know, there's even a hint that just because you're gay, you couldn't. When most of these kids are probably from, you know,
from
straight couples, yeah, or straight singles or whatever.
Going back to this case that Wendy's talking about, it's a good reflection of what our kids today face in schools. A lot of times, you know, it's not the kids that have the problem with, you know, a kid that has two gay parents. You know, more so we see other teachers, administrators, and parents that have a bigger issue with that than the kids. Now, there'll be always bullies in schools, as much as we try to fight it, and we are fighting it. But for the most part, you know, having two dads or two moms, it's not really a big problem for the little kids. It's more
a problem for the adults who teach
the adults,
kids.
Correct.
There's something odd about that, or wrong with that.
Because after all, we know bigotry is learned. It's
of course it is. There's nothing innate about it. What's your experience been in school?
We've had really a positive experience with the kids in schools. And, you know, it's funny, Elijah started Boy Scouts yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was an Eagle Scout, and Tony took him to the meeting, and you know, wondering how well this is going to go over with the scout scouting organization. But for the school environment, we've been really well accepted. But again, we live in Dallas, you know, an urban center. When gay and lesbian couples go outside of that in urban, rural areas, they get a lot. They have a lot more trouble. But no, it's been very positive for us.
And that's good to hear. What is the experience that you're hearing at HRC? Are a lot of cases being referred to HRC where, like this New Jersey case, where there's no evidence that she's doing anything in particular to the kids, is there?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. This was mostly a personal thing and more a worry that she's going to bring this into the classroom. Then.
Well, it's the idea of, you know, there's sort of a famous quote, and I wish I could remember who said it now, but it's the idea of when someone with the authority of a teacher puts you down, it has a huge effect. You know, we can probably all think back, whether it's gay-related or not, we can all think back to things that people have said to us or said about us that that really stung and really stuck with us. And so we really are interested in providing a culture of acceptance for all families, mm-hmm. and promoting that through public outreach and education and ferreting these things out and asking people to take a look at their own internal motivations and what they think about things and to really decide if that's something that that they choose to keep, or maybe it's time to start portraying our families as just as normal and just as dysfunctional as everybody else in the world, and maybe we could all just get along. And so, HRC has a number of programs that they're working on to really achieve these goals, to achieve the support and the policy and the education for our families in order to make equality a reality.
Well, one of the things HRC has been working on has been anti-bullying.
Sure.
What are some of the other things that they're working on in their Welcoming Schools program?
Well, the Welcoming Schools program is a program that HRC launched a number of years ago. It's been piloted in several states now, and there's data coming out that sort of shows that the sky didn't fall and everything's okay. In fact, everything's better. And it's the Welcoming Schools program is a program designed to reach out to educators and teachers and parents and really entire school systems to really embrace family diversity in the elementary schools. There's a component of anti-name-calling, anti-bullying. There's a component of recognizing gender diversity, as well as the main component of it is really just building relationships within communities to embrace family diversity. So that's the Welcoming Schools program. There's the Healthcare Equality Index. This is a really exciting new thing that HRC is doing. I say new, it's been around 4 or 5 years. It's just not as well known as HRC's Corporate Equality Index. But the idea of the Healthcare Equality Index is similar to in the corporate world. It's to really rate hospitals and other healthcare institutions in terms of their policies towards LGBT people. And then there's also the All Children, All Families program. And the idea of this is to create fair and equal practices within adoption agencies and to really reach out and work with adoption agencies to understand their own policies and do training with them, as well as to provide resources to LGBT families about, you know, what adoption agencies are out there, which ones are good ones, how can we help to improve the ones that aren't great. And then there's, you know, federal legislation. I think we have 5 or 6 bills in front of the United States Congress right now saying, you know, here are things that we need for our families. So it's a very comprehensive approach.
Knowing that approach, and actually I want to go back to one thing that you said with the healthcare equality. One of the things that we've worked on lately is a gay couple, you know, if something were to happen to you, Patty, you want to know that Aaron can get into the hospital to see you. And now under an executive order, she can. Does that executive order also include something happens to Elijah or JJ? He's in the hospital. You register him as the father, and then Tony comes, and he wants to see him as the other dad. Mm-hmm. Is that included too?
Well, usually the second parent adoption certificate is what you need there. And it's funny because we actually carry that with us every, you know, we have copies in the car kind of thing for Tony as well. And it especially when we travel, you know, when we go to Florida, we have a place in Florida and, you know, Florida is not very welcoming to gay and lesbian parents or gay people at all. But for the most part, it's, you know, we always take all of our documents when we go to Florida to make sure that is the case. I mean,
and Florida is where one of the most notorious cases happened.
That prompted Rosie O'Donnell to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where a married couple, two women, were getting on a cruise with their kids. One of the women had a heart attack or an aneurysm and rushed to the hospital, and the hospital in Florida would not let any of them in to see her. She passed away. Actually, the partner, the surviving partner, was just honored at the White House this week, given a, not Medal of Freedom, but the second highest award that we, civilian award that we give, because that story touched so many people. In Florida now, would you be safer, I guess, carrying your adoption papers?
Yeah, I think would be safe. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it is one of these things where you do need to show documentation, and you're still in front of a clerk or a receptionist or somebody that's going to put up a wall or a fence that's going to be hard to get past. But yeah, legally, we're protected.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the important things, and Wendy has mentioned many times, the HRC website, the hrc.org, I believe it is. And you know, I did many years on doing my HRC stint. But one of the great things about the Healthcare Equality Index and the Corporate Equality Index is that it's a score that's easy to interpret, that represents you know, how an entity is doing across a whole constellation of issues. And that constellation changes from time to time, as, you know, things like when we're scoring companies on whether they provided health care coverage for gender identity and expression related issues, for transition surgeries and that sort of thing. So it changes over time, and I assume that's true for the Healthcare Equality Index.
Sure, it's ever evolving.
But it's one of those things that you can really just look at the score and really kind of get, no, that's a lot of information packed into that one.
Absolutely.
Little number.
Absolutely.
And it's a great way to just say, okay, in my area, or we're gonna be here for a month in the summer, let's check out everything around, and mm-hmm. if something happens, we want to go here and not here, or wherever.
And it's also a great tool, you know, there's a number of companies who will scramble and do anything to hold on to their 100% corporate equality index score. They pride themselves in saying they're 100%ers. And, you know, you had on some representatives last week from one of those companies. And I think that, you know, the Healthcare Equality Index will have the same impact on the long run, where, you know, health providers and hospitals will want to say, oh, no, we're 100%er. What do we need to do? How do we need to update? And so I think, you know, it can be very powerful. The other thing I'd like to mention is that there are links to legal documents on the HRC website as well to help families protect themselves. And the kind of documentation that Leo was commenting on, that he carries with him everywhere he goes, you know, certainly those are incredibly important. And that's another project of the HRC Family Project, is to make sure that people have access to creating those types of documents, understanding about what they are.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things that you're dealing with is gay people taking care of older parents.
Sure.
And that's a huge part. It's a whole other show, actually. But
mm-hmm.
just mention what's going on with that.
Well, I think it's just continuing to make that point, and continuing to make that a visible part of what we do, continuing to have access, continuing to look at any kind of legislation that is necessary to make sure that we have that, not only for taking care of older parents, but also just taking care of ourselves as we age.
Well, I know them. There's been studies with Whittaker's Communications that have done studies on this that actually indicate that gay and lesbian siblings are more likely to take care of aging parents than their straight counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
That's the research out there reveals that. So that's why it's important.
Certainly, anecdotally, that's true for many of us in our communities.
We had somebody on, a friend of mine, who has a guest house up in P-Town, and we were talking about this. And I've talked about this with a couple of other people that I know from P-Town. And Provincetown is one of the most densely populated towns with gay and lesbian people. And one friend, when she moved up there, she said she noticed it's all gay people and then a bunch of old people. What's going on here? And as she started talking to people and meeting more and more people there, what she found was, yeah, because my brother says that he's busy with his kids. And yeah, my sister says she has her family and you don't have, so you can take care of mom. And that's common. And so the gay person in the family ends up taking care of the elderly parent. That's what happened to me. And I know lots of other people that's what happens to them, that they're the one who gets to do the majority of the care for the elderly parent.
But it's not just I think gay kids, you know, taking care of their parents, or GLBT kids taking care of their parents. There's a serious problem, I think, on the outer edge of life. We hear anecdotally stories across the country about this, where a couple wants to, say, move into an assisted living facility together, and one is accepted and the other is denied. They can't live together through their golden years because of, you know, basic discrimination. And so, you know, that's something that we, as a community, I think, really need to pick up and address, because we're all going to be there at some point. We may need those services. And if we haven't addressed it before we get there, we're going to hit the wall, like folks are now. Sure. And so I think it's a great thing around the country that organizations that focus on issues of aging for the GLBT community in particular are active now. We have so much work to do for equality, but that's one that that seems to be pushed aside, and I'm so glad it's getting attention.
Well, we're certainly aging just like the rest of the population.
Sure. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Leo, I know you have no place to go. Wendy, I hope you have no place to go, because the next show isn't here yet. He's on his way. And the show is locked in that room over there, and he has to get one of the station people.
Poor Amy Goodman's locked in the room.
Amy Goodman is locked in the room over there, so we're just going to keep talking for a few minutes till Christian gets here to get Amy Goodman on the air. We're talking about gay and lesbian families and forming gay and lesbian families. Leo, for somebody who's just tuning in right now and didn't hear the whole story that we were telling, your family, you and your partner were together more than 20 years when you decided to adopt, and you have two kids. How old are they now?
Elijah is 12 and JJ is 7. And I tell you, it is such a blessing to have those kids in our life, and it's so much fun. I love collecting spray painted noodle art and collecting cards with backwards letters on it. And, you know, it's more love than your heart can hold. It's amazing.
I know you've told me some disadvantages of adopting at an older age. And by older, I mean not adopting when you're 20, but adopting in your 40s.
So we're talking about Leo's age.
I'm talking about
Leo's, not the age of the kids.
No, okay. Adopting okay. when you're older. You were running around picking up the kids when they first came into your house and just loving them and playing with them. And
I mean, it was an amazing journey. I mean, I was like, when we first got the kids, it was like, oh, my gosh. It's a lot of physical exercise. I mean, I was lifting the kids up, and you're taking them here and pushing this. I mean, I started losing weight. My arms started getting bigger. I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is amazing. But as an older parent.
More mature.
Thank you. I soon found myself with a hernia. I was like, oh, my gosh. So I'm not the young, you know. So yeah, there are those kind of situations where you need to look at it as a mature parent to lift with your legs and not with your back and that kind of stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
You know what? We need to just take a quick break. We're going to keep talking for a few minutes. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas, the voice of the people. Selected by both D Magazine and the Dallas Observer as the best radio station in Dallas for 2011.
And this is Lambda Weekly. Amy Goodman will be on in just a few minutes because she's in a locked room and right next to our studio, and we can't get her out. We need the key to get her on the air.
Emancipate Amy.
I know. We're talking to Leo Cusimano and Wendy Ring. They are from the HRC Family Project. Leo's a dad, has two kids, so he's been talking a little bit about his family. There are disadvantages to adopting. One of them is your hernia.
Again, you're talking about Leo's hernia.
I'm talking about Leo's hernia.
Right.
It's expensive to raise kids.
It is, and kids are messy, you know, but life is really good when it's messy. And it is expensive to raise kids. I mean, with our adoption specifically, you know, which is a special needs adoption because we adopted siblings, you know, when you have that kind of adoption, there are certain subsidies, and my kids are on Medicaid and Medicare, and so you have those kind of things that help, but for the most part, you know, it's an expensive process, but it's one that absolutely needs to be considered.
Let's go through some of the costs. I know foreign adoptions you can pay up to $100,000 plus all the travel expenses. One friend of mine who adopted, they were adopting from the Soviet Union at the time. Well, maybe it was Russia. It must have been Russia at the time because the kids aren't that old. But they were adopting from Russia. They traveled, flew to Moscow, from Moscow to the Kazakhstan border where the kids are from. They got there. They found out that it was a second kid. Okay, we'll only adopt them together. They had to fill out more paperwork, go home, come back. So they flew a second time. No, the paperwork is wrong. Went home, came, four trips. So just the trips to get these kids,
oh yeah,
a fortune. But in addition, paying,
some countries require you to take two trips. I think Russia is one of those countries that they actually require you to take two trips. Others don't necessarily do that, but yeah.
Anyway, you adopted through Child Protective Services. Is there a direct cost to do that? Do you have to filing fees, anything like that?
No, there is not. Actually.
Okay, so if somebody wants to adopt through Child Protective Services, what do you do? Who do you contact? You know, it's one of those things, it's easy to say, yeah, mm-hmm. Gee, I'd like to adopt, but who do you call?
Well, one of the new things that CPS is doing today is having adoption agencies act as parents, advocates for parents. Mm-hmm. So you can almost contact any adoption agency in the community. Hope Cottage is a good one, and they act as your advocate. So they actually do the training for you and work with CPS to get the placement taken care of.
Well, I think one of the interesting things, sir, you're talking about earlier, I think you had a path that took you through foster care and you ended up at adoption. But I think a real opportunity for, especially for older parents who are settled, if they want to get involved, is to foster some kids, because the heartbreaking thing in Texas and everywhere, it's not even just in the United States, but everywhere, there are kids who are homeless, who don't have, you know, what they call, you know, a forever family to provide that security and love and stability in their lives.
The number in Texas is about 80,000 kids who don't
You know, and that's horrific. That's just horrific that these
kids... There are so many kids out there that need a home. And, you know, initially Tony and I were not looking to be foster parents. But when you go through the training that they give you, you really change your mind and you go, oh my gosh, I would do foster care. And you do have to do at least 6 months of foster care before you can legally adopt. They have to be in your home for 6 months, and that's considered foster care. But yeah, it depends on what kids that you're matched up with as well.
So there really is a real opportunity if a couple settled and say they're going to go traveling when they retire or whatever. But there's a window of time in there where they really want to give back. This is a great way to pursue that great gift that you can give a kid of a stable home and someone to give them the full attention.
And I go back to a reason why I adopted as well, because I wanted to give back. I wanted to make, I wanted it to matter that I lived at all. I wanted to be able to share something with someone, and having kids gives me that opportunity to have it matter that I lived at all, kind of thing, and you know.
I want to get back to the cost, because some mm-hmm. people...
David, that's always the cost.
It is.
We're talking about...
taxes, and you know me. But this is a practical thing here, because some people I know are thinking, yeah, but kids are a fortune. There is some help available. You had mentioned Medicare.
So, well, yeah, there is if you have a special needs adoption. Mm-hmm. And, you know, adopting two siblings is one. Now, we adopted two siblings, and one of the siblings is a kid with special needs. But in that kind of a thing, there is that kind of help. There are subsidies. There's Medicaid. There, you know, when my kids go to college, that will be paid for if they go to a local state school. Also, there's a tax incentive there as well. I think it's $11,000 per kid. And they're doing something a little different. The tax code just recently changed to where you actually get that money. Before it was applied to your taxes, it was taken off your taxes. Now they actually give you a check, kind of thing. So it's a little different today than it was when we first adopted. But yeah, there's that kind of support that you get when you do a special needs adoption. But not all adoptions are special needs, and there are expenses of having kids, absolutely, David.
And some of those expenses are, I mean, aside from the things that are that you think of, you know, the food, the shelter, the clothing.
Well, absolutely, but for us too. I mean, we wanted to send our kids to private schools for a time, and so we had that expense, and you have travel expenses whenever you go anywhere, and you know, Elijah now has braces, you know.
Mm-hmm. The travel, you know, when you just think about it, you know, when Aaron and I have traveled recently, we're like, wow, if you had a family of, you know, two parents and three kids, it's like five plane tickets
mm-hmm.
every
absolutely.
Time for every leg of the trip. And that can be incredibly expensive.
Mm-hmm. But with the help that you're getting, it has helped make it affordable.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it really depends on, you know, what you want for your kids.
And this is where I'm really getting to with this. So if somebody is thinking about it, again, we don't form our families the way other people do, which is like one day, oh, honey, I'm pregnant. We think about it and talk it out. So Wendy, with HRC Family Project, one of the reasons to have something like a picnic where people get together and to have this project is because there are people to talk about it.
Absolutely, and to share the stories and to share experiences and to really validate each other, validate mm-hmm. each of our stories. And if people are, no LGBT person should ever think that they don't get to have a family.
Right.
Because, you know, it's possible, it's doable. We have all kinds of examples of it, and it's a wonderful experience.
And I want to thank both of you for not just being on, but for...
an extended stay.
For your extended stay and making up for our...